Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
The NFL draft has officially ended, and everybody hopefully feels a little bit optimistic. I was out golfing on Sunday. I don't get out and golf very much. And I also went out Saturday went out to dinner. And there are a lot of Outkick listeners out there. It's not a big surprise in Nashville. And so a lot of people want to come up. And during the draft, everybody wants to talk about, hey, what's the best pick? What do you think about this team? What do you think about that team? And it just kind of reminds me, I talked about this in the first hour of the program, to what an extent the NFL draft has become the third biggest sport in all of America. There's the NFL, which is the unquestioned biggest sport. There's college football, which is the unquestioned second biggest sport. And then there's the NFL draft. The NFL draft, this crazy stat for you out there, the NFL draft had more viewers, nearly double what the actual NBA finals had in the past year. First time ever, this is the second highest NFL draft ratings ever. First time ever that the NFL draft has beaten the Oscars. The Oscars used to have like 60 million people watching. I think like 57 million was the high back in 1998. When Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet and Titanic won the Best Picture, going all the way back to the history of the Oscars, there have never been more people watch the NFL draft than watch the Oscars. That just happened this year. So the draft, even as many other television programs are losing audience, the draft continues to add more and more. And our draft coverage, which was fantastic, I heard some of it, on Fox Sports Radio. Props to all the guys that worked on that coverage. We are rolling through the Monday edition of the program. Thursday's NFL draft. We're talking about how massive the audience was. But as big of an audience as there was on Thursday, I think there are two really big stories dealing with the draft that actually are focused on quarterbacks that don't necessarily directly correlate with what happened in the draft itself. And let me explain what I mean. So Saturday, I was saying I was out. I watched the Kentucky Derby. And lo and behold, Aaron Rodgers is at the Kentucky Derby. Aaron Rodgers, who decided on Thursday in consultation with his representation to release the news that basically he was done with the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers is at the Kentucky Derby with several of his teammates and former teammates and everybody else. And he didn't really want to answer questions about the Packers. But it's pretty self-evident that Aaron Rodgers wants out of Green Bay. And I think, and I talked about this in the first hour of the program, but I think he's going to end up in Denver. I believe if you look at all of the different quarterback environments out there, who's on the rosters, how much are they costing, what's going on with the team overall, I think it's really pretty clear that Aaron Rodgers is going to end up in Denver. Because you can kind of read the tea leaves from the draft and see that the Broncos have been trying to set up things for Aaron Rodgers. And all I really needed to see was that the Broncos didn't take Justin Fields or Mac Jones at the ninth pick on Thursday night. If they were not going to get Aaron Rodgers, I don't believe they would have gone forward with Drew Lock and with Teddy Bridgewater. And I don't think they would have drafted Patrick Surtain with the ninth pick. Now, it's possible that ninth pick may get shipped up to Green Bay before all is said and done, and that Patrick Surtain may not play with the Denver Broncos. It's also possible that Green Bay is just going to want future draft picks, and that that pick wasn't done partly with Patrick Surtain in mind. But the way that Aaron Rodgers' contract is structured, according to capologists out there, after June 1st is when it would probably make the most sense for the Packers to trade him. And if the Packers decide to trade him on June 1st, they could go ahead and announce that trade, even though it wouldn't become effective until then. The Denver Broncos are going to end up with him. If I had to bet right now on where Aaron Rodgers is playing come September, when the week one of 2021 season is underway, I believe Aaron Rodgers going to be in Denver. That's a big story. It's worth paying attention to. It is monumental. It could change everything. And there's a lot of betting market news out there. I saw where the Denver Broncos went from 66-1 to win the Super Bowl all the way down to 17-1 because there are a lot of people who are believing what I am hearing and also what I'm telling you, that the most likely place for Aaron Rodgers to end up is in Denver, and the money is already pouring in. And you guys know that I like to follow the money because it gives you a decent sense of what might be happening. By the way, the odds for the Packers have declined substantially as well in terms of their likelihood to actually win the Super Bowl, because if suddenly Jordan Love is starting, that's a fundamentally different team that's nowhere near as talented. It's not rocket science. That's where we are. The other big pick that I think has not been talked about very much at all, and I talked about this to start the second hour of the program, Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson was not drafted. He didn't sign any contract. He hasn't been traded. But what the Houston Texans did when they drafted Davis Mills with their first pick in the third round, remember, the Texans did not have a pick in the first round or the second round. What they were telling you with that pick was, we are not of the belief that Deshaun Watson is playing this year and maybe ever again. Because if you had a 25-year-old healthy quarterback that was the future of your franchise, which was the case as recently as September of last year, you don't go draft a young quarterback in the third round with your first overall pick. You just don't do it. We saw how angry Aaron Rodgers was about the Jordan Love pick. Imagine how angry 25-year-old Deshaun Watson, who's unhappy with some of the decisions that have been made by the Houston Texans, would have suddenly been if the Texans had gone and drafted a third-round quarterback with their first pick, given the fact they don't have a first and a second-round pick. That was as clear of evidence as you could possibly see, and I heard very few people saying this, but that is as clear as evidence that you could possibly see that Deshaun Watson is never playing for the Houston Texans again. And certainly that he's not playing in 2021. Now, I don't know, and we've talked a lot about the legal peril that Deshaun Watson is under with 22 different women charging him with sexual assault. I don't know how that case is going to end, how those cases are going to end. And certainly Deshaun Watson deserves the presumption of innocence in those cases. But I can tell you that as soon as they made it in that situation, that they went and grabbed Davis Mills with their first pick in the third round, what the Houston Texans were telling you is this relationship with Deshaun Watson is over. I'm sure the Texans would like to trade him. Initially, they were fighting whether they would trade him or not. But frankly, I don't think there's any move where Deshaun Watson could be traded right now, because I don't think there's any owner in the NFL that wants to assume that risk going forward. And as a result, I think Deshaun Watson's tenure, based on that pick, is telling us his tenure is absolutely over in Houston. In a moment here, going to be joined by Dr. David Chow to break down everything in the world of NFL health, as well as the latest on LeBron, Anthony Davis, Tiger Woods, Fernando Tatis Jr. Ton of different stories about athlete health out there, particularly coming out of the NFL draft.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
A guy who knows a little bit about football, he's Dr. David Chow, former team physician of the L.A. Chargers. Of course, they were then the San Diego Chargers. We just finished the NFL draft on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. There were a lot of different stories involving health-related issues that impacted in some ways whether or not guys rose or fell all of those different situations I wanted to dive into. And also, LeBron James is back from his high ankle sprain and had some interesting comments. I wanted to get Dr. Chow's thoughts on those, as well as Fernando Tatis Jr., who has got an issue, obviously, with his health with the San Diego Padres. So many different angles to go. First of all, thanks for getting up early with us here on this Monday morning, Dr. Chow. But let's start with the NFL draft and what we just saw. And there were a lot of different guys that had major sort of health-related conditions as it pertained to how and or whether they were able to be healthy. And the first one that I saw, certainly in an early part of the draft, was Caleb Farley. I think he went 22nd overall, Virginia Tech corner, and there were a lot of questions about the surgeries that he had had. But before I even get into him, I'm going to ask you about him specifically. I want you to just kind of tell me, in your experience, what was the draft like? Did you yourself go take a look at different players, look at their health charts? Were you asked regularly questions about health from a draft perspective? What would that process have been like when you were the Chargers team physician?
Well, of course, at the combines, I always say people think that my biggest job was on Sunday during the games, but some of the biggest days were in Indianapolis doing draft evaluations, like a scout, and giving medical grades, and that was a big part of it.
Tell me what that would be like. Like, you would, for Indianapolis, would you be in a medical room and all the different players would come through, and you would take me into that experience for you and what it entailed?
Sure, and as you know, I've written about it for OutKick.
Yes.
But, you know, there were six rooms, and each room had five or six team physicians for the orthopedic portion, and all 330 players across 4 days would come through the room and get examined. So all 32 team physicians, medical staffs, et cetera, would get a look at all 330.
That's overwhelming, right?
It is. I call it Groundhog Day, man. It is like a lot of people coming through. And literally, it's like kind of a meat market, right? Like a cattle auction or whatever you want to call it, or a horse trading, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's a buzz and a blur, literally.
Because there's hundreds of millions of dollars at stake on how healthy some of these guys are. And you've got this huge, like, conveyor belt, basically, of all these different players that are coming in. And so, do you see their medical history in advance? Like, how do you know even what to do, or do you do the exact same exam on every single player?
Well, every room is a little bit different in how they run it, but in our room, we would have someone present them with all their history, and then we'd ask questions, and they'd be at a central table. Then every team would have a chance to look at them. Now, I will admit, there were times where, just based off of happenstance and expediency, that I wouldn't even get up from my chair, hear the report, and think that he was okay. But anytime there was a question mark, there'd be a hands-on exam. And for us, with the then San Diego Chargers, there would always be 50 or 60 names that I would call were dotted, where we were really taking a closer look at.
Look at this guy's shoulder, look at his knee, like something that you're worried about from a health perspective.
Or just, we really think we're going to draft this guy.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He may not have any health issue, and we just want really to find you to fine-tooth comb him, because we really think that we are in line to get him and want to get him and targeting him. And so I instituted that because I said, guys, I can try and look at all 330 players, but the reality is, you know, it becomes a blur. So, you know, help me out and give me the ones that you're really, really interested in. But they didn't always draft off of that, because sometimes they fell. And then on draft day, it always reminded me of Thanksgiving, because you got to understand, only the head coach for us was in the main draft room. All the other coordinators and coaches were in different rooms and back in their offices. So there'd be about 10 people at what I would call the head table, the Thanksgiving table, where all the adults were. And the head athletic trainer and I would be in the corner of the main room, but we'd be in the corner at what I would call the kids table.
Yeah.
You know,
And they might call you over to consult right beforehand or something occasionally?
Yeah, they sometimes would, and they sometimes, there were drafts where they wouldn't say anything to us. You know, kids seen but not heard in the corner.
Yep.
And there were sometimes we were a big part of it. I remember one year where we drafted two players that fell, and both of them had medical issues, and we were comfortable with them. And after we drafted them, they were thrilled because they thought they got two first-round picks. We would have drafted the second-round guy in the first round. And the GM comes over to us at the kids' table afterwards and says to the head athletic trainer and I, well, man, it's all on you now because they have medical issues. And I remember distinctly saying to him, I understand if either one of these guys don't work out that I'm fired, but if they both do, do I get a raise?
Yeah.
And he just chuckled and left, right? It's just the way that it was.
How did those players in particular, do you remember, like, how they paid from a health perspective?
I will tell you, because I've written about it and we've talked about it on podcasts at Outkick and otherwise. That was the year Antonio Cromartie was drafted for us as number one. And I remember having Marcus McNeil, our second-round pick, our longtime left tackle, on my podcast and saying, I don't know if you know this, but Antonio Cromartie cost you a lot of money. He cost you first-round money. We would have taken you in the first round, but he fell out of, you know, what was supposed to be the top 10 into the teens, and we ended up taking him, and he wasn't even one of the dotted players. As a matter of fact, the first time the GM came up to me, back in those days, we didn't have it all computerized. It was on paper. And he'd say, what do you think about Cromartie? And I'd look at the paper. I mean, I couldn't remember Cromartie from anybody else because of all the people that were at the combines. And I gave him my report again. We've already talked about it. And then he'd ask again. And then I remember one pick before it came to us, he came and asked again. And I turned to our head athletic trainer and said, look, I hope he realizes I told him everything I knew the first time, unless there's reappearing ink on this piece of paper. I don't know anything else to tell him, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we give him the evaluation. Cromartie had a nice NFL career. We drafted him with the Chargers, and we got Marcus McNeil in the second round, who we probably would have taken in the first round, but he had back issues. Cromartie was coming off at ACL. Now, that was an extraordinary year. It wasn't always like that, but it's just an interesting time.
We're running through talking to Dr. David Chow, formerly team physician of the San Diego Chargers at the time. Of course, now they're in L.A. So let's go into this year's draft. Am I correct that the first player with medical issues in the first round to be drafted of a significant nature was Caleb Farley? The Titans took him, I believe, at 22. Are you at all nervous about his medical history in terms of his future in the league?
Well, to be complete, technically, the first player with medical issues in the draft is the first pick overall for Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, that's a good
Trevor
point.
Lawrence.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence had shoulder-related issue surgery, right?
Yeah, technically, when he was drafted, he couldn't pass a physical because he's still recent off of left non-throwing shoulder surgery. But he projects to be fine. So, you know, he skipped the combine limited medical exams because he actually got married on that weekend. But he did attend the Masters, so good on him. But that was – so it's probably not that big of a deal. But you're right about Caleb Farley, and – Vegas and FanDuel and others have it right. They had him pegged at 22.5 over under in terms of the number that he would be drafted. He was drafted at 22. And earlier in the week, there was some speculation that Tennessee would take him. And I chimed in saying, well, Tennessee has a history of, you know, doing that. They did it with Jeffrey Simmons, right?
That's right. A couple years ago.
ACL. Yeah, and he wasn't going to be ready week one, yet they said, you know, here's a guy who's falling, who's really a top 10 guy. Let's take him. We think he's going to be okay. They've done the same with Caleb Farley. Hopefully he'll be okay. But my worry is he's had a second low back surgery coming off an opt-out year. It's a matter of time before he needs a third surgery. And there were NFL Network reports that he had weakness in his big toe where he couldn't lift it up. So, look, I'm sure the Titans physician looked at him at the limited combines. I'm sure John Robinson's making an informed choice. But But he's also probably saying, look, this is a top 10 talent, and I'm getting him at 22, and we're trying to get over the top here. So it's a calculated risk in terms of Caleb Farley.
How often would there be a player, and obviously Drew Brees is one that I know you know very well based on his injury that he had in San Diego. For instance, the Dolphins wouldn't clear him. The Saints did. How often is there a 50-50 call? You know, what I mean by that is there might be 16 teams that say, hey, this dude's off our board. And the other 16 teams might say, hey, we think this guy is going to be okay. How divergent are the opinions when it comes to health from NFL team perspectives based on your experience?
Well, more than anyone of your listeners would think, people think medicine is a science, and there's a big part of art to that science.
Yes.
And the opinions are as different as scouts or GMs on a rating of a player. Often there's overall agreement, Trevor Lawrence, but sometimes there's divergent opinion. Justin Fields, where should he really go, right? And
yes,
it really depends. And beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and medical opinion can be as divergent as GM opinions. You try and base it in fact, but you're still trying to project. For example, Zach Wilson, the number two overall pick, had a pretty significant throwing shoulder surgery. He came back and played pretty well this last year, but will that last? Obviously, the Jets seem comfortable with it. So there's always some opinion to it. And of course, I always get a chuckle out of any time after a surgery, it's declared that surgery was successful. Well, look, you could only judge surgery being a success over time. Same with a draft class, right? Right now, all 32 teams declare success in the draft, but you really don't know until over the next few years and time.
It is well said, because I always do love every team thinks and every coach and every GM has their job on the line. The Monday after the draft ends, they all think they did a fantastic job. And over the next 3 and 4 years, we really find out whether or not that is in fact the case. Can you come back with us for one more segment here? Because I want to get in. Well, let me ask you one more question here. Are there any other NFL players, high draft picks, or guys that fell in a substantial way? I can think, for instance, of Trey Smith, who ended up getting drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs, where the reason why they were drafted where they were was almost entirely, in your opinion, based on medical conditions.
Well, you know, it's a very unusual year with the pandemic, because there wasn't the regular combines.
Right.
There wasn't the leak of information that there was. And, you know, we wrote almost 3 months ago at Outkick how the medical work would be done this year, which is different than any other year. And then right before the draft, we had all these reports of, oh my gosh, it's so unusual, and medical reports are still coming in. The reports were a lot sketchier this year. And since I base my information off of, you know, analysis of what's out there publicly, and it, you know, look, if I know inside information, I really can't even talk about it. There wasn't a lot of leaks this year because there wasn't a combine where hundreds of people saw the players. So the information medically was more limited for me this year, and quite honestly for the teams as well. So there probably is more guesswork. But one of the players that I think has some risk that actually ended up being drafted in the middle of the first round, probably because he was the number one edge rusher out there and the edge position is so important, is Jalen Phillips for the Dolphins. Look, he had 3 concussions and he, quote, quit football from UCLA because of the 3 concussions, and then played for Miami and did well. But, you know, is he over his concussion history? A lot of times that lingers. And then, of course, the other thing is, from a moped accident, he had a surgery, which is called a proximal rocarpectomy, where he's lost at least 3 bones in his wrist, making his wrist weaker. Yes, edge rushers can be effective with a cast, but can he do all the weight room work it takes to get to the next level? And is a guy who can probably not flip sides anymore, because an edge rusher always needs a strong outside arm and hand. Is he going to pan out where the Dolphins think he is? Maybe he will, maybe he won't. And that's some of the intrigue that happens.
We'll talk with Dr. David Chow when we come back, because I want to ask him a couple of questions. One, Fernando Tatis Jr., obviously one of the best baseball players in all of Major League Baseball. What is his prognosis going forward? Plus, a couple of big-time Lakers, Anthony Davis and LeBron James, returning from injuries. As we get geared up for the NBA playoffs, what is reasonable to expect for them?
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
We are finishing up with Dr. David Chow, our medical expert. We've been talking a lot about the NFL draft and health-related conditions there. But I want to dive into Major League Baseball and the NBA with some big-time playmakers who are coming off of injuries. And I want to start with Southern California, San Diego, your hometown, or at least the town that you live in now, Dr. Chow. Fernando Tatis Jr. has been productive, but he's also had what appears to be significant shoulder issues. We're only just now into May. How much of an issue is this going to be for him going forward? Can he finish the season? What will it likely impact him from a health perspective if he's able to do so?
Well, what he's done so far coming back from the shoulder injury is amazing. Excuse me, fogging my throat here. It's early in the morning here in San Diego. But look, he's had three episodes of left shoulder subluxation in the previous month, and he has come back and changed his style of play and so far has been effective. I said all along, and I believe it to be fact, it is a matter of when he will need left shoulder labor repair surgery, not if. And the hope is he can get to the off season to do so. But so far, imagine a quarterback in season across 10 days changing his throwing motion. Well, that's what Fernando Tatis has done. He's kept his top hand on the bat and on the follow through, but he still has hit, you know, what, five home runs of that Dodgers series a week ago. He's been amazing so far. Can he keep it up is the question. I mean, this is, you know, besides asking Tim Tebow to throw his change his throwing motion, this literally is putting a throttle on him. It's like asking a college basketball player to play with three fouls. You don't play the same way. Yet so far, he's had some success. So kudos to him and the Padres. Hopefully they can keep it going. But I think it's a matter of time before he has his surgery, and hopefully he can get to the offseason before he has it.
Just to clarify, when you say, I think you said a shoulder sub, what did you describe the injury?
Shoulder subluxation, yes. Subluxation.
Okay, shoulder subluxation. For laymen out there, is that basically your shoulder coming out of socket, or is that something different?
Yes, it is your shoulder shifting out of the proper position in the socket, although transiently. Shoulder dislocation would be it comes out and stays out.
Yes.
Subluxation is it shifts and comes right back in. But it means he has a labral tear. And the GM, A.J. Preller, has said and admitted that there is a labral tear. He called it slight, but that's like saying slightly pregnant. It's been symptomatic three times in the previous month. And so, look, they're doing a great job. I'm not second-guessing the team. They're pot committed right now. Whether he has surgery now or later on, he would miss the season and be ready for next season. So they're just trying to play it out.
Okay, and based on your experience having covered and treated issues like these, the danger is, does he make it worse every time it comes out of the socket, or is the injury basically what it is, and the question is just, can he play through the pain and adjust his swing accordingly?
Well, you know, there is a risk of making it worse. I'm sure they're following it closely. My best guess is they've told Tatis, we'll keep going. You have to change your style of play. If it happens again, we're going to shut you down because we have you locked up for basically a lifetime contract here. And so that's where this is good news. The Padres and Tatis and his camp are aligned because they're, quote, married to each other for the rest of their lives / careers.
So in general, this would be if he had to have surgery, he's out for the season.
Yes, if he had surgery now, he'd be out for the rest of the season, back for next season. And part of the reason they're able to keep him going is because he has that really long-term contract, right? That they are aligned here. If this were his free agent year, you best bet his agent would step in and say, Fernando, you need to have the surgery because we need to be prepared for next season.
We're talking to Dr. David Chow at Pro Football Doc on Twitter, also writes at Outkick, does fantastic work. Okay, let's go into the Laker injury-related issues. Lakers have fallen, I believe, all the way to fifth or sixth in the NBA's Western Conference as we get closer and closer to the playoffs. I'll start with Anthony Davis. What is Anthony Davis's injury issue? Based on what you've seen from him, will he be 100% when the playoffs begin?
I think he'll get there. I mean, there were reports of a calf strain, but it seemed all along it was more Achilles tendonitis, and that's an injury that takes a long time to get better. He's in the process of getting back to full strength. He's playing limited minutes and increasing over time. I think he gets there by the playoffs and before the playoffs, barring a setback, but this is an injury that fans look at and you say, oh my gosh, why does it take so long? But the reality is, with poor blood flow in the Achilles area, et cetera, and to be careful of setbacks, you have to have a slow ramp up, and that's what the Lakers are doing.
Okay, now LeBron is back, and you wrote about this, and it got a lot of attention. LeBron came out and said, basically, after this high ankle sprain, I don't know if I'll ever get back to being 100% again, and that surprised you that he would say it. The Lakers obviously are getting closer to the postseason. What do you think the odds are that LeBron is back to near 100% by the time that we get to the postseason, starting, I guess, May 20th-ish, so not very far away, 3 weeks from now or so? And what do you think about his comments made so far?
Well, I thought his comments were very unusual, and let me explain. I am not hating on LeBron. I have all the respect in the world for all of his talents and how successful he's been. I mean, he's among the best of all time. But I find that really unusual. In general, first of all, you do return to be essentially 100% after a high ankle. Patrick Mahomes, Christian McCaffrey, Saquon Barkley, Michael Thomas in football, and it is a more common injury in football, have all returned to 100% from recent high ankle sprains. So I believe LeBron will as well. I just find it interesting, his comments. Technically, he is absolutely correct, and I'm not hating on LeBron. Technically, you know, when you drive a new car off the lot, is it ever 100% and brand new again? No, as the tires wear, as you get a door ding and whatever, but it's still a very good car. And what I found unusual is elite athletes like LeBron, superstar athletes like LeBron, as they get older in life, seem to go out of their way to deny the effects of age,
right,
to deny the effects of injury and cumulative injury. Tiger Woods, with multiple back surgeries and a spine fusion, talked in general about age and recovery, but never said, I'm not 100%. Tom Brady has not done that other than general comments about, sure, recovery gets tougher. But look, these superstar elite athletes, and I put LeBron in that category, normally go way out of their way to deny that they're losing a half step or anything due to injury or age or otherwise. So I found it interesting that he was openly saying, I'll never be 100% from this ankle, or I'll never be 100% from really any injury in my lifetime. Now, maybe this is a way to put a chip on his shoulder and that this works for LeBron, but I find it very unusual. In general, athletes and athletes that I've treated and witnessed and whatever are always in denial about not being at 100%. So I just found it interesting is all.
We're talking to Dr. David Chow. You mentioned Tiger Woods there for a moment. What have you seen about Tiger Woods recovering from the car accident? I know that he has posted a couple of videos. I don't think we had you on to break down all of the Tiger. Maybe we did. I can't even remember. But I know you've written about it, the Tiger Woods-related injuries. What are the chances that Tiger comes back healthy, and how would you assess his treatment so far based on what you've been able to see?
Well, you know, when it happened, it was obviously very unfortunate, but I said way back when it happened, the car accident, that he would not return in 2021 in this calendar year at all. He'd be lucky to return in 2022. And look, he's already beaten the odds. He's had multiple back surgeries, including the spine fusion, which by definition limits your range of motion. And obviously your back is a very something you're very dependent on as part of your golf swing. Yet after he had all this back surgery and a fusion, he still did win the Masters one time. So he has exceeded expectations. With this foot injury, ankle injury, leg injury, with the open fracture and what have you, this is a long recovery. This is into 2022. Can he make it back? I think so. Will he be Tiger again? That is the significant question, right? If he can be elite and be dominant and win. And in the end, Father Time is undefeated. And how many aging golfers or aging athletes in any sport can afford to miss an entire season and come back stronger than ever? And so that's the question mark for him.
Dr. David Chow, fantastic stuff as always. I appreciate the time. Thank you for getting up early with us. Enjoy the week, and thank you.
Thanks, always, Clay.
All right, that is Dr. David Chow. We will finish off the show on that note. Much goodness in this show. Encourage you to go download the podcast. You can search out My Name, Clay Travis. You can search out Outkick. Find us wherever podcasts are located. Tomorrow, we'll be breaking down more of the Aaron Rodgers drama, I am sure. I appreciate all of you hanging out with us. This is Outkick. Same bat time, same bat channel tomorrow on Fox Sports Radio.